Hello and welcome to Nightcap with Jim. I'm the titular Jim, and tonight we have another edition of Jim Goes to the Movies, double feature edition. Tonight's episode will be discussing Brightburn, the James Gunn-produced horror film, and John Wick 3 Parabellum. For more content you may enjoy, please check out our Morning Mangami podcast and our other social media content at Mangami Players all across the different social medias. Alright, let's get into it. Alright, so to begin, let's start with Brightburn. I had been looking forward to this movie for a while, and again, that's unusual for me because I am not a big horror movie fan, but I do quite love the just basic elevator pitch concept of this movie, which is just quite simply, what if when Superman was growing up, you know, and started to enter puberty and whatnot, and discovering his powers, what if instead of, you know, having the parents that he had who were so loving and supporting, but also able to steer him down the right path, what if he turned evil? And that just basic concept makes for some very interesting pathways to go down with, not even, and obviously not just for the actual character of Superman, but you can get something like Brightburn, where you have, you know, kind of this sort of skewed universe that's kind of, you know, similar in some ways and then extremely different for the most part. So first off, did I like the movie? Did I not like the movie? I really liked the movie. It's so good. Like, it's so messed up, though. Like, for real. Like, like, these guys really went for it. I mean, you know, like, we've seen, I mean, throughout the history of comic books, you know, pretty much every character at one point or another, especially the big guys, have had some sort of an evil, obviously they all have evil counterparts, but like themselves go through some sort of a thing where they become evil, or it's like an alternate universe or whatever, or timeline or something or other, where that particular version is an evil version. One of my favorite examples of this is Superman in the storyline the Flashpoint Paradox. This is one of my favorite stories in all of comic books. I just love it so much because it's so interesting and so different, because it just takes the world that we know. And as with a lot of like time travel-y alternate timeline kind of stuff has been done, it keeps a lot of stuff very much the same. It's just slightly different. It's twisted a little bit, as opposed to it just being completely, you know. But Flashpoint has both of these. Like, things are very, very different. But there are things that are still the same, and it's just, you know, like, but all these, like, differences, these twisted, the way that it's twisted, the way that it's skewed, it all comes from this one act, and, you know, it has this ripple effect that changes a lot of stuff. So that's kind of in Flashpoint Paradox, when, instead of Superman, you know, growing up with this loving family that has adopted him, and you know, the earth, and he has made the earth his adopted home. Instead, he's been locked away for his entire life in this secret underground bunker, and so when he finally, you know, gets out of there, he is not a happy camper. So he takes it out on a bunch of soldier people that have really kind of been dicks to him his entire life. So seeing that kind of stuff, especially a character like Superman, seeing a character like Captain America, you know, the characters that are, let's be honest, self-righteous, sometimes rightfully so, but a lot of the times it's just unnecessary. It's part of their character, and I get it, But, you know, like when Captain America Civil War, like that whole spiel, like both in the comics and the movies, I'm Team Iron Man because Cap just doesn't get it. And he, you know, he wants to be his own. Like, so, okay, so I'm going to, this is kind of, I'm jumping off on something else here. So there is this documentary called, I believe it's Dirty Wars. And it's by a pretty well-known guy. I'm forgetting his name off the top of my head. If you heard his name, you'd know him. I obviously don't know his name because I was not planning on talking about this. I'm off on a random tangent here. So he, in this documentary, what he does, he delves into, the American military's, like JSOC guys. And he discovers that there's this, kind of splintered off, group that is just doing these incredibly, you know, they're all black missions, off the books, and a lot of them, there's a lot of fucked up, just really not good stuff happening, like, killing civilians and stuff like that, and, you know, drone attacks and this and that and whatnot, and there's, like, no oversight, at all for this particular group, and, they're just kind of running, they're running wild, and, you know, whatever you, I mean, you know, you can say what you want about the documentary and the veracity of these allegations and whatnot. That certainly doesn't mean that I have, you know, like watching that documentary definitely did not change my opinion about the military in general. You know, I come from a military family, so I will always support the military and, you know, police as long as you're doing the right thing. Like, if you start doing the wrong thing, I'm more than happy to call you out on it. So, you know, the other thing about this documentary is there's not really, like, you know, it's not like he actually shows you, you know, a bunch of Americans with M4s and TAC body armor and shit with the flag on their shoulder talking about, bam, civilian shot in the face. You know what I mean? Because it's just pretty difficult to get that kind of evidence. But anyway, so that's when I think of Captain America and Civil War, that's what I'm thinking of in a way. Just, he's just not like evil, you know what I mean? It's just that he wants to be able to operate without any oversight at all because he thinks that the best hands are his hands. And that's that kind of self-righteousness that really disturbs me about characters like Captain America and like Superman, and how I believe that they, it's so easy for them to turn against the system and break laws, and, you know, because they can act without this oversight. See, you thought I was going off somewhere crazy, but I brought it back around. But that's basically, again, what Brightburn does so brilliantly, and what's so great about this concept of, you know, let's just have this alien kid who's got these crazy powers, and let's make him kill a bunch of people. and not bad people either. Like, he's just going to kill whoever pisses him off. Doesn't matter. And that's kind of what goes down. And it's so great because it takes the superhero genre and really flips it on its head, turns it around, smacks it on the ass, and then, you know, drops it off of a cliff for all intents and purposes. And that's so awesome. And the fact that, and the reason that this movie is so good definitely comes from the guns. And I say the guns because, I don't know if I probably should have looked this up, but, the two writers also have the last name of Gunn, and I'm pretty sure that's not a coincidence. So, either siblings or something, not sure. But, so it looks like a whole family of guns on this movie, and, you know, getting it produced by James Gunn, who, this is where he started, you know, in making movies that were totally messed up and out there. You know, he started in this company called Tromeo and Juliet, which has made these really out there, you know, independent, we're gonna do whatever the hell we want to do kind of movies, and him coming up through that, you know, writing for these projects, and then, you know, finally getting his big break, which was writing the Zack Snyder directed remake of the Dawn of the Dead, which I adore that movie to death. But the writing is really where it starts for me in that particular movie. I mean, Zack Snyder did a really good job, but, like, it's not really his movie, I don't think, you know what I mean? There's a couple of Snyderisms in the work, you know, like the obligatory slow motion stuff, but there's a lot of handheld things going on. It's pretty rough and dirty towards the third act. So, you know, because most of his movies, you know, no matter how grimy or how dirty, you know, the things are, you know, on the street level or whatever, the look of it is always pretty clean and polished. You know what I'm saying? But this movie's very rough and very gritty once you hit the third act. So I don't really feel like it's Zack Snyder's movie. I feel like it's more James Gunn's movie. I have to go with Terry from Brooklyn Nine-Nine on this one and say that it's the writer's medium in this particular instance. But him doing that, you know, and then making Slither with Nathan Fillion and Elizabeth Banks, who Elizabeth Banks came back probably because of James Gunn for this one. You know, I mean, having the conversation with David Yaronofsky, I'm probably mispronouncing that name. That's the director of this movie. You know, like, they were like, who are we going to get to play Tori? And I'm sure James Gunn was like, hey, let's call Elizabeth. Why the fuck not? and then, you know, doing Super with Rainn Wilson, which I'll come back to that later maybe. And then, you know, getting the big break, which was Guardians Volume 1, you know, he's always been this independent filmmaker, and it shows through with his work because he really just does what he thinks is good as opposed to letting outside interference dictate his actions. And so for you to have a producer like that on your movie means that you've got someone who's on your team as opposed to someone who's going to be like, oh, let's try this. I want to change it to this, okay? Instead, you're going to have a producer that's like, you know what might be a good idea, though? What do you think? No? Okay, fine. We'll do it your way. No problem, man. I'm here to support you, you know? I just want to make your thing as good as I possible. I want to do everything I can to make sure that you have the tools and you have the power to make your movie as awesome as you want. So I'm just going to pop in my two cents, and if, you know, if you don't like it, no biggie. You know, we're just here. It's a creative process. We just want to make everything awesome. And that's always the best kind of a producer to have. Now, it's awesome to have also, you know, a Kevin Feige on your side, because he's the guy who has the power to give you, you know, $200 million and then give you, you know, a lot of free reign to go and make whatever movie you want. But I always feel like it's better to come from that independent world a little bit, because when you know how to make something really great on either what I call no budget filmmaking, and then, you know, low budget guerrilla filmmaking, and you can do something incredible with that stuff, especially if it involves like fight scenes or action sequences or visual effects. Once you get $50-100 million to make a movie, you've got like all the ways that you can do. You've got all the, you know, the penny pinching, you know, coupon clipping ways of doing things already in your head, so you can keep, you don't even need sometimes to get the budget up that high. And that's what Brightburn again does so well, especially having someone like James Gunn producing it, is, you know, a couple of guys write this really cool script with this really great idea, and then they get this director, they get $6 million, they get James Gunn to produce it, and you know, it's been out for a little while. At the time of this recording, I think it's been out about a week or so. But this episode isn't actually coming out. When this episode actually is released, I believe it'll be out for about like a month and a half or so. I'm recording this way in advance for when it's being released. But anyway, you know, and so it's already made its money back after opening weekend. So, like, I think it's made like $17-18 million so far off a $6 million budget. So that's, they tripled, you know, their investment, their, you know, investment, off of this movie, which, is so cool, because the way that they set up the ending, definitely leaves room for sequel potentials, and I can't wait to see if they do that, because this movie definitely, I feel like, should get another one. And the cool thing is that since it's already made its money, and, you know, it's been proven that this concept can make money, they could give them, like, just, again, still a super small budget, like maybe like $10-12 million, and they'll be able to ramp it up, you know, do even crazier stuff with it, especially because by the time at the end of the movie, things, you know, they get pretty crazy. But anyway, I don't want to get into spoiler territory, really. What I will say, though, that might be a little spoilery, but just because it's so freaking cool. So if you don't want to hear anything spoilery about this movie because you haven't seen it, go ahead and skip ahead to the next segment, because I'm going to end it after I talk about... I'm going to end this particular segment after I talk about this little spoilery thing. So if you don't know... Again, don't want to hear spoilers? Skip to the next segment. Don't want to hear spoilers? Skip to the next segment. Don't want to hear spoilers? Skip to the next segment. 3, 2, 1. I'm going to go spoilery right now. Okay. So at the very, very end of the movie, after all the action's complete, we get another James Gunn... actor who's been in all of his stuff, which is Michael Rooker. And Michael Rooker, I just adore him so much. He's one of my favorite actors out there. He's so cool. But he plays this internet personality type, kind of conspiracy theorist guy. And this is what I was talking about a little bit earlier, with the kind of skewed, twisted way a universe can be, just like an alternate timeline or something like that, alternate universe. He starts talking about these other beings out there, like a half-man, half-fish kind of creature who's sinking boats, so that could be a possible, you know, like evil Aquaman. And then he talks about this witch who's strangling people with ropes, and that's, you know, a possible Wonder Woman Lasso of Truth situation. Again, evil version of that. And then a couple of pictures pop up on the screen, and so you have Brightburn, who is, you know, the main character of this movie, and then, you know, the half-man, half-sea creature deal, and then the witch with the thing. But then there's a couple other pictures, and one of the pictures is of the Crimson Bolt. Now, I said I was going to come back to this, because this was Crimson Bolt, I hope you have seen it, because you're listening to spoilers right now, was the Rainn Wilson character from the movie Super. So they put it out there, like, I mean, unless it's just somebody that looks incredibly like the Crimson Bolt, this is already a shared universe. So that is super exciting for me, because I would love to see the Crimson Bolt in something again. And especially because, like, he's a very violent and messed up character, like, but he is altruistic and wants to do the right thing. It's just the way he goes about it is very horrific and violent, and also sometimes over the top, like the bit where he well, now I'm getting into spoiler territories for another movie, so never mind about that. But yeah, like, it's just such a cool hopeful thing for the future, and hopefully this will be a, you know, like a James Gunn universe of films. So that's super exciting. Anyway, that's going to do it for Brightburn. Stay tuned. The some of you that wandered into spoiler territory with me, and we're going to come back and talk about John Wick 3 Parabellum. Excuse me, John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum. All right, we'll be right back.
Hey, Nightcap listeners, this is Heath from the morning show, Morning Mug of Me. So if you want more Mug of Me content and you just want to check out more of the Mug of Me players, go over to Morning Mug of Me wherever podcasts are streamed. That's Morning Mug of Me, and we're a morning show. So start your day with me, and you can end your day with Jim. Again, that's Morning Mug of Me, and you can find that wherever podcasts are streamed. That's MANGAMI players, all condensed into one word.
All right, and we're back to talk about John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum. I'm not going to get too crazy with this particular segment because, obviously, as you may note, I haven't talked about the first two John Wick films in this particular episode. So we're going to save most of the good stuff for that, and I'll do that one. I'll look forward to that one around the time that it comes out on... this new one, John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum, comes out on Blu-ray and digital and stuff, so we'll bring it back, because it'll be relevant again. And but anyway, Oh, so good, dude. Like, I love the John Wick movies, okay? I adore them so much. Oh, they're so cool. They're just so good. I mean, Keanu Reeves just is so amazing. I love his work so much. He is such a great actor, but also, like, the best at action. I mean, Tom Cruise is great when it comes to, like, doing really crazy stunts, but there's nobody that can match, really, Keanu Reeves when it comes to the kind of stuff he does in these John Wick films. I mean, yeah, you got your Jackie Chans and your Jet Lis and your Donnie Yens, who are all incredible as well, and they're, you know, and that top 1% of just incredible actors who can do incredible stunt work. But I mean, I've never seen anything like John Wick, you know, and I've seen a lot of movies, you know what I'm saying? Like, again, I just listed off three people that I'm sure there aren't a lot of you who know who Donnie Yen is just off the top of your head, or have seen stuff like, you know, Flashpoint and Kill Shot, I think. I know one of them's Flashpoint. Anyway, you should check out Flashpoint with Donnie Yen. That movie's freaking crazy. But anyway, yeah, Keanu just decimates in these movies, you know, and the reason for that is because of the training that he goes through, because the training he does is absolutely insane. He does like 6 to 8 months of training for all these movies. And it shows, you know what I mean? Like, and the other thing that makes these movies so, so great is the lack of editing. And, I mean, you know, you've seen Taken, and maybe Taken 2, and maybe you suffered through Taken 3. I actually kind of like those movies. It's just those are the kind of movies where I can just turn my brain off and not really give a crap about anything, you know? Like, there aren't really any stakes for me when I watch the Taken movies, because it's like, well, it's Liam Neeson for one thing, so he's going to win at the end of the movie. Like, that's just the deal. You know, the only time Liam Neeson doesn't win is at when he fights wolves or goes up against Nazis. But, Jesus, that got dark. But anyway, you know, but I mean, like, you know, you've watched Taken 3, right? And there's a bit where, like, towards the top of the movie where things start to pop off and he's running from some people. I won't spoil it in case you haven't seen. Actually, I don't care. He's running from the cops because of stuff, you know, because he's framed for killing his wife. I don't really care. You don't care about Taken. So there's this bit where he's trying to traverse a fence, and it's like 5,332 freaking edits in like 10 seconds. You know what I mean? And it's like, Jiminy Cricket, was it really that hard to get Liam Neeson to climb a fence? Like, you couldn't just put his stunt double in there and shoot him from the back or something like that, but you had to, like, do fucking 10 jillion freaking edits to get him over this one fence and then this second part of the fence? Really, bro? But that's what's great about the John Wick movies, is that does not happen, you know? Like, yes, there's editing, but each shot is at least 3 to 4 seconds long. And a lot of them go for 10, 20, 30 seconds. And that means the actors and the stunt people have to learn anywhere from 30 to 50 moves. And if you don't know anything about stunt choreography, doing 30 to 50 moves in a single shot takes a lot of work and effort. You know, I mean, there's just designing the entire fight for one thing. And then, you know, which exact movements go in this particular shot. So if you're doing 30, 40, 50, 60 even. I saw one shot that must have had like 60 or 70 individual movements in it. And when you put the work in and get it right, it's magnificent and it's stunning and it's wonderful and it's amazing. And that's what Chad Chad Stahelski? I'm butchering names today. I'm sorry, guys. I'm usually a lot better at pronunciation than this. But whatever. But the director, you know, Chad, insert last name here, And the way that him and Keanu work together to, you know, and the way that, and the stunt team that they have, the stunt choreographers and coordinators, and the stunt people that they have working, and then the tactical training that goes on, it just combines to make this soup of delicious excellence in the action world, because, you know, So much of it is just this over-the-top stuff. Like, I mean, even David Leitch, who co-directed the first John Wick film, you know, he went on to do Atomic Blonde with Charlize Theron, and that movie was very much John Wickian, you know, in terms of just, like, keeping the action grounded and you know, giving Charlize all the training possible, so that she could do all, at, you know, as much of the stunt work herself as possible. And she did, and put in that work. And, you know, and it shows, because she's in that, again, like, she's in that top one percentile of these, of actors, these performers who can just kick ass. And we see their face, you know, as opposed to having, you know, obscure their face, obscure the stunt person's face, you know, shoot him from behind and all this stuff. Like, no, dude, Charlize Theron, Keanu Reeves, they can do this stuff for real. And don't worry, I'm coming to her in a minute. But yeah, just the way that they, the way that Chad and, you know, Keanu work together to bring that. But anyway, but David Leitch, you know, even him, who has these two movies with just this amazing grounded action with these performers that just, you know, kill with doing amazing stunts. He then goes on to do Deadpool 2 with this big over-the-top action, which, don't get me wrong, I love Deadpool 2. Love it to death. And then now he's doing, you know, Hobbs and Shaw. And that is over the, that looks super over-the-top. I'm going to watch it, and I'm going to love it. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, but every movie now, you know, most of them are just this over the top crazy, you know, it's that's not gonna happen, kind of stunt work. You know what I mean? Especially stuff like Marvel and DC. That's just so, you know, incredible. I mean, again, I'm not complaining at all. Suffice to say, I just wish there were more filmmakers out there like this, like Chad and David Leitch, who, you know, do this really, who are really good at doing this grounded stuff. Like, that's the thing that doesn't bother me about, like, stuff like Deadpool or Hobbs and Shaw, is because David Leitch is directing it. Yeah, it's going to be so over the top, but at the same time, there are going to be plenty of moments where it's not, where it's as grounded as possible. Because, you know, it's just Jason Statham beating up a bunch of guys in a room, you know? So, it's going to have some of that great, gritty, just down and dirty, grounded type action to it. And then, you know, a car is going to fly through space or something, whatever's going to happen in the movie. but yeah, it's nice to have these directors out there. And I just wish there were more of them, you know, because I love this kind of stuff. You know, Christopher Nolan's another good example of that because of what he did with, you know, like the Dark Knight trilogy and whatnot. excuse me, I need to take a sip of my beverage. And like Dunkirk and stuff like that. That's just, you know, it's very realistic action. And it's not super crazy. Even when it gets crazy, crazy, it's not like unbelievable, like, pfft, no, you can't do that. Except for probably The Dark Knight Rises with the bat plane, the bat wing. Is that what it's called? I forget. I haven't watched that movie in a while. But anyway, yeah, I just, I'm scattered thoughts today, guys. I mean, it's a double feature, so, like, I'm thinking about a lot of different things all at once here, and it's all kind of spewing out on you guys, and I apologize for that, but, you know, this is my process. I bet you're pining for the last episode where I actually had my thoughts in order. even though it was more my emotions as opposed to, like, actual thoughts. You know what's really funny? I'm talking about the last episode that you guys listened to from me. I haven't even recorded that yet. So I'm doing this all wrong. So you just got a little peek behind the scenes there of how I make my stuff. But anyway, John Wick 3, John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum. Let's get back on topic, Jim. Come on. All right. Amazing. Easily the best one in the series. The action in it is absolutely incredible. It just goes, you know? It just goes. And it never really stops, you know? Like, there's a couple of moments where it's like, okay, I can breathe now. Okay, I can breathe. And you can kind of get your heart rate back down to, you know, a little bit, so you're not, like, having a heart attack. but then it immediately ramps you back up again. But it's so great. Like, it's just this amazing roller coaster ride. And I can't talk about this movie without going into a little bit about Halle Berry. Halle Berry is incredible. She's amazing. You know, I've always liked her. You know, I've always thought she was really good. I've never been a fan of, like, the X-Men movies too much. You know, like, the first one and X2 were pretty good, and Last Stand, meh. I mean, I like the way that it ends. Like, the ending is really intense, you know, and emotional and stuff. But, like, for the most part, I feel like they just kind of wasted having that incredibly diverse and talented group of people. You know, you had your Hugh Jackman, your Patrick Stewart, your Ian McKellen, for crying out loud, your Halle Berry, your Famke Janssen, you know, I mean, even Ben Foster's in that movie, for crying out loud. Just like, meh. And then, like, Origins, it was alright, you know, meh. But they, you know, obviously totally butchered Deadpool. You know, like, for me, the only ones I really, 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 really like, I kind of like Days of Future Past, but, you know, they only give me, like, 5 minutes of Halle Berry in that movie, so, and then, of course, Logan. Logan is magnificent, so no one can say anything bad about Logan without somebody, I don't know who, showing up and cracking him in the jaw, but yeah, I just never been too much of a fan of, but, like, Halle Berry in those movies, though, like, I'm with it. Like, she is great as Storm. So that was a pretty long-winded way of me saying I like Halle Berry. But in this movie, she, like, takes everything to a whole new level, and I really hope, really, 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 really hope that she comes back for more. Because, again, the way that this movie ends, definitely, just like the previous film, sets up pretty definitive expectations for continuation. And I can't wait for that. Because what Halle Berry did in this movie was extraordinary. It was magnificent. It was so freaking awesome. Because she did just as much work as Keanu. Actually, more work. So she had to go through all the weapons training that Keanu did, and she's never done this level of stuff before, and yet she took to it like a fish to water. Like, you know, there's, because, you mean, we've been getting the training videos of Keanu on these movies, and seeing him just tear it up on the gun range and whatnot, but seeing Halle Berry do it, and she's never really done too much gun stuff in movies before, like, it was like, oh shit, like, these guys that are training, these two are good. Because, like, they took Halle Berry, you know, who does not do gun movies, and they made her into a total freaking badass. Like, and she kills it. Like, oh my god. And then on top of the gun stuff and the fight training and the, you know, this and the that, her character has these two badass dogs. And they're like this really super badass breed of dogs. They're like, and the way that they're trained is just, you know, so crazy. So not only did she have to do the gun stuff and the fight stuff and the blah blah blah, but she also did like 3 or 4 months training just with the dogs, just so that she could do this stuff with the dogs. And it's so intense because there's this great interview of Keanu. I think it was on Colbert, and he's asking him, you know, like, what the experience was like working with the dogs, and he's like, yeah, no, we couldn't even look them in the eye. Like, only Halle could even, you know, like, look at them or talk to them or pet them or any or like hang out with them or anything like that. Like all the rest of us, we had to walk on eggshells around these two things, just be like, don't look them in the eye because they'll kill you. And like the first time John walks into, you know, the room with Hallie in there and these two dogs walk up to him, you get a little scared for John Wick, you know, like for the first time ever, you're like, John Wick might be about to fucking die. And, you know, because these dogs are scary, man. Like, they are magnificent creatures, but they're terrifying. Like, when they are, like, it's freaky, man. Like, it's scary. Like, it's like, I'm just gonna very slowly, very casually turn, walk away. I wish I had a teleporter right now. Please don't bite me. Please don't bite me. Please don't maul me to death. And that's exactly, like, because these dogs are so hardcore, man. They're incredible. And the stuff that they do, because the thing is, like, that's why Hallie had to go through the training with them, is because she's giving them the commands and stuff on screen. It's not like they have a trainer off screen who could be like, you know, because they train the dogs in I forget which language it is. I think it might be Danish, but I'm probably getting that entirely wrong. But it's, I believe, a Nordic, one of the Nordic languages, you know, Swedish, Danish, something like that. But it might be Finnish. That might be the one. I'm gonna put my money on Finnish. But anyway. So she's got to learn these commands in a foreign language. So that's another thing that she's got to do. But it's not like they can have a trainer off screen for this stuff, because again, with John Wick, you get these incredible, you know, long, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 second, 60 second, 2 minute long shots. And you can't have a trainer talking about Das, good fighting, you know, whatever. So Hallie, that's why they had to train Hallie for this stuff, is so that she can be, you know, like, okay, I'm gonna stop with my horrible imitation of Nordic languages here and just be like, kill that guy, kill that one, maul that mother to death, you know, like. so she's actually given, and it adds so much to it, it really does. Like, and Hallie, oh my, I'm just in love with her character in this movie. I really am. Like, she stole my heart. You know, she's got these incredible dogs that are just gorgeous creatures, but they're also hardcore badasses. And she is just gorgeous. Just gorgeous creature. And she's a total badass. Like, I would not fuck with her or her dogs if you gave me all, like, if you gave me all the John Wick bounty money. Like, no, man. $14 million is not gonna cut it for me to fuck with Halle Berry and these dogs in this movie. Like, no way, dude. No way. And then Mark Dacascos. And again, I just really butchered that name. If you watched Hawaii Five-0, the new one, the first five seasons of it, you'll know him as Wofet. And, you know, he's had a great career, just doing a lot of great stuff out there. And his character is one of my favorites in this franchise. And he's just great as well. Okay, yeah, that's going to be... Okay, one more thing. So, this movie is the first one in the franchise where there were a couple of... there's this fight scene where John's fighting these particular two guys. I'm not going to tell you when it is in the movie, where it is, what it is about, or anything like that. It's just John's fighting these two particular guys. And that could be anywhere in the movie, because John fights a lot of guys at once in this movie, so that could be anything. I could be talking about any fight. But anyway, there's these two guys that he's fighting, and about like 30 seconds, maybe a minute or so in, maybe a minute and a half in, I was like, I really hope John doesn't end up killing these guys, because I like these guys. Like, they're great. Like, I don't want them to go. Which was really weird, man. Like, because every other, you know, person that John fights in these movies, I'm just like, kill him! But these two, I was just like, no, John, don't take them from me, please. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I'm not going to tell you. But that was just really weird, you know, like to see these two characters that, you know, are trying to take John out. And I was just like, no, please don't do it. Did he? Maybe. Did he let him live? I don't know. You'll have to find out yourself by going to see the movie. Okay, I'm going to shut up now. Because I'm all over the place today. Anyway, that's going to do it. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Jim Goes to the Movies, double feature edition. Thank you so much for listening again. You know, I say it like every time now, but, you know, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you guys listening to my podcast. You know, it means a lot. Oh, God. Oh, my throat. No. Oh. Oh, God. It just felt like the Sahara Desert back there for a minute. Okay. But, yeah, thank you so much for listening. It means so much to me, you know, and I really appreciate it, you know, genuinely. I always feel like when people add the word genuinely to something, when they're talking about their feels, it makes it sound a little disingenuous. So let me take that again. Take two. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. It means a lot to me, you know? I really appreciate it. Thank you. So thank you. Thank you so much. That's going to do it for this episode. And please make sure to check out our morning show with Heath. He's got a great show as well. He talks about all kinds of good stuff too. Like he keeps you more up to date on like what's current and what's going on. I'm kind of all over the place, so so definitely check out his show because it's great. Check out our other social media content at Mangami Players across the different social medias. You're definitely going to want to hit them subscribe buttons, them follow buttons. Get them notifications because we're going to have some really cool stuff coming up for you soon, probably within the next month or so. So you're not going to want to miss out on that stuff. And then we're pretty soon going to start doing some exclusive content kind of stuff. You're going to want to check out like our Patreon and whatnot, because then you're going to get some, first boots on the ground type of content. And it's going to be pretty toyed. So definitely check that stuff out as well. Thank you again so much for listening. Thank you for stopping by for a nightcap. I hope you have a lovely evening or a lovely morning, lovely rest of your day. Whenever you're listening to this this episode, this labor of love of mine. And we crossed the year anniversary mark last month in April, which... 2 months ago in April, because this episode's coming out in June. But yeah, we've been doing this for a year now, Mangami, man. Like, how crazy is that? And like idiots, me and Heath did not do anniversary episodes. So I figure I'll just take this time real quick to acknowledge that we've been doing this for a year. And the only reason we've been able to do this for a year is because you wonderful, wonderful human beings, and maybe animals, I don't know, maybe you put it on your house and your dog listens to it as well. I don't know. Anything could happen. but all you wonderful people and possibly animals and, it's all because of you guys that we've been able to just sustain and keep doing this for a year. So thank you again so much. We love you. We love you guys out there and girls. I wasn't trying to be sexist. I was just like, guys is my kind of go-to word. But we love all of you people and possibly animals out there. We love the animals anyway, even if they don't listen to the podcast. But thank you so much. So much. Because this is a year and 2 months of talking about movies and TV shows and music and books and stuff and comics and whatnot. That's crazy, man. That's amazing. So thanks again. And good night. Just thank you so much again. Like, for real, I can't stop. Because, like, this is crazy. You know, it's one of my favorite things to do in the world. And it just wouldn't be possible if you guys didn't keep tuning in week after week or, you know, month after month or, you know, bi-weekly, whatever. But thank you so much again. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And thank you for stopping by for another nightcap. Good night. Good day. Good evening. Good morning. Stay Mangami.
The Nightcap with Jim podcast is a Mangami production, hosted by James Smith, produced by Heath LeBombard and James Smith. For more Mangami content, visit Mangami Players all across the social medias.